Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 51551, ray at rte.ie. After is the latest children's book by Irish children's author Pádraig Kenny. The book is set in a post-apocalyptic world after a flood wiped out all the world's technology, including the humans, who are all connected to a central information system called Hive. And Pádraig joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Pádraig.
Hi, Ray. Nice to be here.
Congratulations on the book.
Cheers. Thanks very
much. Book number?
Book number six.
Right.
Yeah, which I find hard to believe myself, even at this stage, you know. The first book was a miracle. Now I'm a book number six and I'm thinking, you know, this is fantastic.
When does a writer become prolific? What's the definition of being prolific?
It's a good question. I don't know. People call me prolific because I tend to write one book a year.
Right.
But I do know people who write maybe one or two books a year, which right. really, really impresses
yeah.
me.
And this is your job now?
More or less, at the moment, it's my job anyway, you know, and it's going well, so I'm happy.
Because we often hear how badly paid authors are.
Yeah, yeah, and we're still badly paid. But, but a lot of people are badly paid in the business. It's only really the top tier authors that really tend to have a long-term career and survive, you know, and yeah. there's, you know, people in the middle like myself who, you know, just get by from day to day or year to year as it is for me at the moment, you know.
So would you say it's a vocation then?
It is, yeah. It's like wanting to become a priest or something, you know. It's like you have to be half mad to want to do it because you kind of, it's a kind of compulsion. It's kind of something you have to, if you don't want to do it, you have to fight it.
Right.
But I don't want to fight it. I, you know, this is the way I want to live my life.
And when did you realise you had this compulsion?
Oh, do you know what? It was probably when I was about 9 years old looking out the window in school. You know, just daydreaming. And I just knew I wanted to make up stories somehow. And then I started reading comics. And then I went to the cinema. And then I started reading books in the library. And then I realised, you know what? You can actually make these yourself. I can turn my daydreams into something physical. Something you can see on the screen. Something you can hear. Something you can put between the pages. And I thought, that's it for me. That's what I want to do, you know?
Right. Did anybody advise you against it as a career choice?
Well, my mother used to say to me, she said, will you earn any money from it? And I used to say, yeah, yeah, of course, Ma, of course I will, you know. And that went on for years and I didn't earn any money. But, you know, you kind of hopefully get to a point where you do earn some money. But it's a tough job.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. You really have to.
But it allows you to be forever young, I suppose, because you're inhabiting these worlds that you make up in your head and it's playing.
That's absolutely it, Ray. Absolutely. Bang on. It's all about play. And I always say to adults, if you're writing fiction, even if you're a literary author, it's all about play. It's all about daydreaming. It's all about... I saw a great video recently with Charles Schulz, guy who created Peanuts. And he was talking about how he had to sit down every day and create that cartoon every day, or I think it was weekly. And he said he had to sit at his desk with a kind of a sense of ease in his head, a sense of lightness. There was no sense in trying to force it. It was a kind of playful mood he had to be in, and then he'd sit, let the inspiration come and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy the experience of play, that sense of ease, that sense of lightness. And that's when he knew the idea would come. So there was no sense of forcing it. It's all about like being a kid again. You know, play and pretend, that kind of thing.
Yeah, which we all do as children, but we lose it very quickly as we become adults. And they're saying now, they're talking about the value of play when it comes to our mental well-being.
Yeah, yeah.
We all should play more.
Yeah, I think I'd be probably insane if I didn't daydream and know myself. If I couldn't put my stories on the page myself, I wouldn't be happy. Writing makes me happy. I get into that kind of trance-like meditative state when I'm doing it, when it's going really well and I'm really happy with it and I'm set up for the rest of the day.
You're in the zone.
In the zone, exactly. That's how it works, you know.
So after post-apocalyptic, so somebody has got their hands on AI. They've created these bots. They've even put chips inside of humans' heads. And then the whole thing goes awry. And we're left with this sort of, I suppose, desolate landscape and very few humans left. But one of them is Jen, and she's hanging out with Father. And from the beginning, we as a reader, you know that Father is different than your average dad.
Yeah, I originally wanted to write a book that was centred on a father-daughter relationship. And because I don't do realism, I thought, well, that's not going to work for me. And then I said, you know what? I love science fiction. I haven't written a science fiction book. I'd love to write a science fiction book. What if I made the father an android? So he's almost like a child. So he's an android. She's human. The world was destroyed by technology. So there's a bit of tension there, that kind of thing. And also, it was great fun to play with. He's an android. He has no experience of what it's like to be a parent. So he carries around a parenting manual with him.
Dr. Geller's
complete guide to parenting, yeah, which is completely invented. And he he relies on this, and also to a certain extent the child parent roles become reversed because he's almost as innocent as she is, and I had great fun writing that too.
But it's interesting because she's, it doesn't say her age, she's around 13, is she? In your
or 12,
head?
Yeah.
Right, 12, 13. 12, yeah. But she's an old head on young shoulders, probably because what she's been through.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I love her character because she's strong and she's resilient she's quite cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted her to be almost, she's almost like the parent, really. She's kind of the more commanding presence. You know, she's more inquisitive than father is. She's stronger. She's had a tough life, a hard life. I mean, anyone would have a hard, tough life. 99% of the world's population dead, everything destroyed, you know. So she's had to survive and they've had to find food. And basically it's surviving from day to day. So she's had to kind of fend for herself, not fend for herself, but fend for...
And when you hear post-apocalyptic and desolate, you go, oh, that's not for me. It's very, there's loads of humour in it.
All right,
you write humour very well. There's sort of a spark between the two of them.
Yeah, I always think you can't just write a serious book. There has to be some kind of humour that lightens things up a bit. And that kind of lets people know what the characters are really like. You know, if characters are really comfortable with each other, like a parent and child, they have a bit of banter between them. Like I have with my own kids, you know.
Yeah. What age are your kids?
Well, they range in age from, 22 to 16, and I have four of them.
Right. Oh, yeah. So they're too old for your books now.
They are, unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, I used to use them as test audiences for my books when they're like 9 to 12.
Sit down there, you're the focus group.
Yeah, that was it. Unfortunately, now it's a case of they're like, yeah, I'll read your book whenever, you know.
And have they got aspirations to write, or...?
No, fortunately for them, because I wouldn't recommend it. It's a tough job. But one of my daughters is big into art. And the other daughter likes a bit of acting. So there's a bit of that arts thing going on there.
Right.
Which I like, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. But most of the arts don't pay well.
No, and that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're doing them right and you're happy doing them, you're a happy person, you know. And sometimes, you know, happiness is more important than money, although you do have to survive.
Yeah, yeah. I think I see that mentioned and I read that more and more. And I think it was a sort of readjustment as a result of COVID that people just looked at their lives and thought, well, is this it? You know, is it?
Yeah.
On the sort of the rat run going into work and then people go, I'm not getting joy from this.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people stuck at home had to get joy from somewhere. So they found it via the arts, via people playing music online, watching theatre online, you know, reading books and stuff like that. And I think they began to realise how important art was for us to basically sustain us and allow us to survive to a certain extent.
I wonder if we reframed arts as play for adults.
I think we should. I really do think we should. And I think for me, for writing my books, I like the idea of not just children reading my books, but parents reading my books and allowing themselves to access their kind of childhood self.
Mm.
You know, to read children's books again, to realise that children's books are as viable a form of literature as, say, literary books like John Banville or Colm Tobin or whoever.
Well, I enjoyed it. I read it from cover to cover. I really enjoyed it. And that word, which will baffle a lot of parents as well as teenagers, singularity. Go on, explain yourself, singularity.
Do you know what? I only have a vague understanding myself of the singularity. I do know it's something in relation to technology reaches a certain point where it, you know, blends with humanity and
we
become one.
Yes, yes.
You know,
so my understanding is there will come a time when we'll be able to upload our consciousness into a cloud.
Yeah.
So somebody described it as the only limitation now on us living forever is our body.
Yeah.
So if we can upload our consciousness onto some computer or hard drive or cloud, we can live forever.
Yeah. Well, I had this idea, I thought, in regard to the singularity, I thought, logically, if you follow it to its logical conclusion, you know, I have people like Elon Musk, dare I say his name, talking about putting chips in people's brains, you know, so they can move things or they can control computers, etc., and things like that. And I thought, well, what if we got to a certain point where, like smartphones, we had chips in people's heads? So I came up with this idea of the hive, where everybody is interconnected via this vast communications network. And then I thought to myself, well, what if something went wrong?
Yeah.
You know, what if someone flicked a switch and melted everyone's brains? Well, all the people who had the chips in their heads.
Like the scary thing is, Porrig, we're only one step away from that because we are all connected because we all carry around these very powerful computers in our pockets.
Yeah.
The only thing that's missing there is the subcutaneous chip. And people have tried to do that. These transhumanist peoples, they've done it themselves. So they're saying that that's the future. We'll all have this subcutaneous chip and all our metrics will be sent off to some central computer. And if your heart rate increases, they will know. And they'll know where you are when your heart rate increases, and it'll be used against you in a court of law. And scary, scary, scary. Yes. You say somewhere, danger, it's not the danger from technology. It's more the people who create the technology we should be afraid of.
Yeah, I think so. That's the problem. I think technology is great. And AI can be great if it's used in a proper way. But there are people, you know, all these tech billionaires, etc., who want to use it because they want to make things easier for themselves and they just want to make money.
That's the bottom line.
Pure and simple. And, you know, it's bad enough for writers and artists. We're struggling to make money at the moment. But if they've created technology that makes us completely redundant and, you know, they earn money from it, then the billionaires are happy and the artists, what can we do, you know?
Have you tried putting some prompts into, say, ChatGPT and seeing what comes out? Go on, be honest.
I've tried. I've said to ChatGPT, write a sample of writing like Páirí Kenny.
Right.
And it came out with this thing. It had obviously been scraped from previews of my books online somewhere. I could recognise certain moods and adjatives and certain words or whatever.
That you would use.
Tricks and things I would use, but beyond that, it was kind of only superficial.
Right.
I mean, the story itself made absolutely no sense. It was dire.
So you're safe for the moment.
Hopefully, I'm safe. Hopefully, fingers crossed.
The book is available now. After Páirí Kenny, life is different in the after. Without a past, there is only the after. That's it. Thanks, Páirí. Good to see you.
Thanks, Ray. Cheers.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.